Our governor calls Utah the startup capital of the world. And it tracks. We've got a fast-growing, well-educated population and a buzzing economy. And just last week, Utah unveiled the Startup State Initiative, a resource portal for entrepreneurs. From step-by-step guides to a business plan generator, startup.utah.gov is now the first stop for starting or growing a business here. That's startup.utah.gov. Here's what Salt Lake's talking about. This weekend is General Conference. It's when Latter-day Saints from around the world gather at the church's headquarters, downtown Salt Lake City. And the timing is impeccable for some LDS women who are up in arms about a church-sponsored Instagram fiasco. Now, as residents of a place that often struggles to untangle church and state, where could LDS women's frustration lead us? And what is the tea? It's Thursday, April 4th. I'm Ali Vallarta, and this is CityCast Salt Lake. Cynthia Winward, you co-host the At Last She Said It very popular podcast about the experience of women in The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Welcome to CityCast Salt Lake.
Oh, thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
I need to do a little bit of setup here, and I want you to tell me if I get any of this wrong, okay?
Okay.
Okay. So this year, the Relief Society, which is the women-run philanthropic office of the LDS Church, celebrated its 182nd anniversary, which is an unusual number to celebrate. And in the run-up to that celebration, a number of women around the country, not just in Utah, boycotted Sunday service. They cited lack of equality with men in the church, among other things, which we'll get into. In the wake of that, the church put out an Instagram post sharing a quote from first counselor in the Relief Society named Annette Dennis. And this is the quote heard around the world.
Yes.
There is no other religious organization in the world that I know of that has so broadly given power and authority to women.
Yeah.
How do you view sort of like this, if you had to give a state of the state of LDS women right now, what's your view?
Well, I had to leave a comment when I heard that. And my comment was something like, is this a joke? Mm. Like, you know, Episcopalians ordain women and there are female rabbis and Lutheran pastors that are women. And so I felt that was not accurate. Yeah. But I guess, you know, what I've heard from other people is, well, she used the word broadly. So it's like, you know, everyday LDS women have power. You don't have to be clergy. And it's like, yeah, but that didn't sit well with so many women because we're talking about decision-making power. Like, I think that's where so many LDS women feel the lack is, I mean, to quote the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, you know, women belong in all places where decisions are being made. Hmm. And so for so many of us, including myself, that's the beef we had with that quote. It's like, but we're not in the rooms where decisions are made.
Yeah. I mean, you live in Utah. What are you hearing from women in the church that you're in community with? Like, do you think this quote is a reaction to a changing vibe?
I think it is a reaction to a changing vibe among a certain demographic of LDS women. And I would love to see exactly what that demographic is. Is it mainly like women 30 years and younger? Is there not like an age bracket to it? Is it just women maybe like myself who have been in the church, you know, our entire lives and we're just fed up with the lack of representation? I would love to know. I'm sure the church gathers statistics on all these kinds of demographics of women. I have no idea. From my podcast, I can tell you that we lean more like 30s, 40s, 50s, even 60s. So those are the women who are listening to us. It's not usually like the 18 or 19 year old women. It's usually women who've had a little bit more life experience, a little bit more leadership. The leadership that is available to women within the church that start to feel like this is not equal at all.
Yeah, I mean, that's also like 30 and up is kind of also the age when you become a decision maker in your community.
There you go.
I mean, this post garnered nearly 8,000 comments.
Right.
And social media outrage is kind of a double-edged sword. It can lead to something you described on your podcast as people talking past each other. But I wonder also, like, what's the benefit of a PR kind of disaster like this?
Yeah, I see it as a hugely positive outcome. I think from what we're hearing from like listeners to our podcast is I feel like I'm not alone. I feel like I'm not crazy. I feel like it's not just me anymore because, you know, on social media, you can see like if your friends comment, right? So usually like their comments would show up first among those like 6,000 plus comments. So I think that was really helpful to women is to just kind of feel this en masse, you know, whereas so often women feel alone, like I'm the only one, but it's like, oh, my neighbor commented on this and I feel like I have an ally now. That was the benefit, I think, of it being so viral.
Well, and the church has no choice but to see it.
There you go. They saw it all right.
The thing that is so kind of curious to me about this whole online exchange is I'm trying to understand if it's a snafu or if church leaders are falling out of touch with women in their organization.
I don't think it's a snafu. I don't. I really think that this has been simmering for a long time. I mean, the history of Mormon feminism is not new. It's been going on since I was born, which I think often is a surprise to many Latter-day Saint women when the wheels start coming off for them and they start seeing the inequality in the church as they think, oh, am I the first to feel this? And then all you have to do is a little bit of digging on Google to figure out, oh, this goes way back. We're talking, I mean, depends on how we're defining it, but at least, you know, 50 years, women have been trying to talk to church leaders about getting more representation and equality.
Why do you have to do the digging on Google? Because I feel like LDS church members spend so much time together. I'm like, these conversations can't happen like in the parking lot.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing, right? The hall class, right? Instead of going to class at church, you go to the hall class, you go to the parking lot class. Yeah, I mean, really. Just from a practical point of view, why would the church have on like their own website the history of female dissenters within the church? They're never going to spotlight that. That's not their game. So you have to find about it in the hall class or on Google.
When I was reading the editorial piece calling for a, sort of a walkout or a boycott of church a few Sundays ago, it wasn't written by a Utah woman. It was written by a woman in Seattle, I think. But what I heard in that piece was women in the church asking for more institutional power.
Right.
But what does that mean?
I think it could mean lots of things. What's interesting is I think so often when women like myself talk about having more representation, very Orthodox members, usually women go straight to, oh, you want ordination. And it's like, you know what? There are 101 things that we could do for women between the way things are now and ordination. Like, I have a degree in finance. Why can't I be a financial clerk? My husband is the financial clerk in our ward right now. He's a CPA, so it makes sense to have someone like him, but they can't have someone like me because I'm a woman. That doesn't require ordination. I mean, and there are 101 other callings, jobs, responsibilities like that where we could get really close to parity and they choose not to. And that to me is the baffling part, is it's like, why wouldn't you just do everything you could without having to change any of our quote unquote doctrine to at least make it look like they're trying. I don't know the answer to that.
I mean, if you change those 101 other things, but still didn't give women priesthood authority necessarily, how would it change the look or feel of the church?
Oh, I like that you said that. Look, I think it would change the optics big time. I think just seeing more women in more meetings could change the feel of the room, could change the decision making. Like I said, seeing women, you know, who could just count the tithing for crying out loud. Like, how could that not change things when all of a sudden women really are behind more doors where those decisions are made? Like, I think that would go a long, long way to helping women feel like, yeah, we're on par with the men, as opposed to feeling like, wait a minute, I'm not allowed to count money. Why? Wait a minute, I can't be a Sunday school president? Why? Like, that makes no sense, none, when it comes to like the necessity of ordination, because those aren't callings that require priesthood authority or a priesthood office. If we're going to really get into the weeds of like LDS theology, right, some things require priesthood office, but very, very, very few callings require that. And yet women are banned from so much that doesn't require it.
This is like a little tangential, but I used to work in advertising. And one of the kind of trademarks of selling or buying advertising is that women make most of the buying decisions in this country. Like, yes. You want to sell a car, you want to sell anything, you sell it to the women, right? Mm. So it's funny to hear you point to specifically financial offices that it feels like women are kind of being shut out of.
Correct.
What's the fear?
Oh, what is the fear? Let's look into our crystal ball and see. Like, I don't know what the fear. I can tell you the things that I've heard over the years, which is, I've had instances where I like made a list of things that my local church leaders could do right now. And like, I would go and meet with like a state president and say, here are 13 things we could do right now. And a lot of them were things like, you know, have women in these meetings, or if you can't call a woman to be a financial clerk, have her call her to be like an assistant, like you can make up a calling. And it's like, well, then that would mean we have men and women together behind closed doors, like affairs could happen. And I'm just going, So is that really? And that's not the only person I've heard it from. I have heard it from many, many, many men over the years. And so is it like, really, do we see men having no control and we see women as all Jezebels? Like that, is that really the kind of look we're going for here? I mean, we're in a different world now where men and women do work together in businesses, in the marketplace, and somehow we manage to behave. You know, of course, if people are going to misbehave, they're going to misbehave. But to use that as a reason to ban women from counting tithing, like that seems like a really, really poor excuse to me. Yeah. But it's one I hear over and over is, you can't have men and women working that closely together. Like, that's so ridiculous.
Wild.
Wild.
Mother's Day is on the horizon, and the good news is that you can find everything you need at Harmon's. Whether it's a little something to brighten Mom's Day or a memorable spread, here are a few ideas. For breakfast, try Harmon's house-baked cinnamon rolls with freshly squeezed orange juice and a package of fresh-cut strawberries. If you're spicing it up with Bloody Marys, don't forget that Harmon's has an olive bar with over 12 different varieties. Now, flowers are the perennial favorite, and you can order online or pop by the store last minute, shop succulents, potted plants, and elaborate arrangements. May's flower of the month is the hydrangea. Very appropriate. Hydrangeas are fragrant and elegant. And if sweets are in order, Harmon's has added raspberry to their selection of brownie flavors. Find all mom's favorites at your local Harmon's or order online at harmonsgrocery.com. Epic Brewing is one of the OGs in building Utah's craft beer scene. But I am most excited about their recent adventures in canned cocktails. First, they released the Utah Mule. And as a big fan of ginger, I have been sipping those for almost a year now. But now, this April, we have the Utah Margarita. A delicious, locally fermented blend of real lime and agave. And they create alcohol by fermenting cane sugar instead of using tequila, which means you can buy Utah margaritas at the grocery store. Pick up a 6-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita or Utah Mule at any local Harmon's or Trader Joe's. Or you can visit Epic Brewery on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. They're open 7 days a week. And this fall, look out for the Utah Cosmo. I mean, one of the reasons that we're having this conversation, you know, this isn't a religious podcast, but it is hard to disconnect sometimes Utah culture and LDS church culture.
Sure.
And this year, as I'm sure you know, is the 8th year in a row that Utah has been ranked the worst state for women, everything from our safety to pay parity to holding political office. Mm. What could it mean for Utah women broadly as we witness LDS women taking a stand either against the church or kind of starting to distance themselves from it.
I think that's such a good point that you bring up, like this is happening in larger society in Utah. And I think that is a direct result of the LDS culture, because we don't see women on the stand at church, because we don't, I mean, unless they're doing the music or they happen to be speaking that day. But do you know what I mean? Because yeah. women aren't in all the places where decisions are made. I think it's very easy for that to have bled out into our society, even in 2024. For most of my life, LDS women, we were advised, told, counseled to not work outside the home. And yet those demographics for decades have never added up in Utah. It seems like most women do work outside the home. And so I would think that since we aren't meeting the quote unquote ideal, which is stay-at-home moms, that having LDS women work outside the home, work in equal situations with men, that they would take those experiences out in the workplace and demand more for their own church experiences. And I think that would, I think that could create kind of a snowball effect, that just because, yes, we are the dominant religion in the state of Utah, but imagine if that 42% demanded equality, like how that could change so much. It could change our legislature. It could change our business places. It could change, you know, pay equity. It could just change so much. How could it not? So yeah. I have hope that as more women change, not necessarily the institution of the LDS Church, that that would have a trickle down effect, hopefully throughout Utah for all women.
Can a church exist or succeed without women or buy-in from women? I mean, I always was just think of women as like the architects of society.
I think on paper, the LDS Church can exist without any women. I think in practical terms, no, because like you were saying earlier, we do the bulk of the boots on the ground kind of work, right? With children, with youth. So on paper, yes. In practicality, no.
It feels almost like a dichotomy to me that you have like so much of the architecture of the church is organized around women. And yet on a technicality, they don't have organizational power.
Right.
Do you think we're going to get to the other side of that? Like, again, we as just like non-Latter-day Saint Utah women have a very vested interest in that movement.
Yeah. Are we going to get there? I think we will eventually. I've been at this long enough that I don't think it's going to happen in my lifetime. And that makes me really sad to say. I don't see enough mainstream women, to kind of put air quotes around that, mainstream LDS women who want more. I don't know if we're still a minority. I don't know, like, what would the tipping point be? Like 50% of LDS women want more? 70%? I don't know. And so that's the million-dollar question. I don't know. I wish I did, but I don't see it happening anytime soon within the LDS Church. And that makes me sad to say. I want to be wrong. I really want to be wrong.
So then you don't think the church is fearful right now that women are finding power and asking for more?
Ooh, fearful. I don't know if that's the word. Maybe that is the word. Maybe they are fearful that, yeah, women are starting to kind of look around and go, hey, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Church is the most sexist organization I belong to in society. Like, that is not sitting well with so many women. And so many women are starting to speak up about that, whether it's like on a podcast where I talk about it, whether it's on blogs, whether it's just with girlfriends at lunch. Like, it is talked about so often. I think the hard part is it's so hard to gauge how many women maybe feel the way I do, because there are repercussions to speaking up. And that's a whole nother conversation. But I can tell you, like, there are plenty of women who are pretty high up, if as high as women can go, I suppose, in the church, who write us letters and send us emails and say, I can't say anything about this out loud. You know, it would cost me in XYZ ways, but keep doing what you're doing. It's important work. So it's really interesting to see still how many women are afraid to speak up against the patriarchy right now in 2024.
Yeah. I mean, you and your co-hosts speak pretty frankly. But from listening to your podcast, it seems like you and your co-host are often in conversation reconciling the institution of the church as like this organization with, you know, jobs and things like that, with the spirituality of the church and the faith that is so far beyond an institution itself. Do you see yourself as an organizer or a movement builder?
You know, that's interesting. So many people want us to be. They want us to be like activists and let's do letter writing campaigns and let's show up and march. And I think because I have seen the arc of 50 years or so of feminism within the church, and nothing has changed, nothing substantive has changed yet. I think our goal is more help individual women to change, and then they in turn decide how they're going to go forward with this organization, whether that's they stay and they become very nuanced and set strong boundaries, or whether it's they leave. I mean, and there are a lot of, you know, kind of in between areas there. So yeah, we're not really organizers as far as like, this is what you should do. We're saying, this is how it's affected my own life. These are the choices I have made. You go and do what's best for your life.
It's now less than half. It's about 40% of Utahns that identify as Latter-day Saints.
Right.
And in the same way that you feel like you can't speak for all LDS women, I can't speak for all non-LDS women in Utah.
Yeah.
But there is kind of this sense, I think, with particularly the social media post and the you know, almost 8,000 comments reacting to it, that what I heard from non-LDS women was kind of a rah-rah, right? And I want to be really careful about that, because as someone who isn't a member of the church, I don't know how much that's my place. As non-Mormons who want to understand, because at the end of the day, our lives still do very much intersect with this church in Salt Lake. It's our biggest landowner in the city, right?
Mm-hmm.
What historical connections can't we make that we should understand?
I think what's important to understand is so many Latter-day Saints believe that even if, say, there's a woman who's very orthodox and orthoprax, but she does want change, it's not her place to talk about that. That only comes through the president of the church. And so even though women may feel like they want things to change, we hear so often, I will be patient. And so I think that's something for people who are residents of Utah who are not Latter-day Saints. I don't know if they quite understand that even if women want change, they very much, and not just women, men also, very deferential to the hierarchy, which is God will tell the prophet when it's time to change. And so there really is a very high wall, I think, that a big hurdle for people to get over, which is, okay, but maybe good inspiration comes from good information. And the more the leaders hear information from those of us in the pews, maybe that could, you know, assuming someone is an all-in believer and they have to believe that the prophet will get the revelation. Well, giving the prophet good information would hopefully lead to his inspiration to change. Is that how it works? I don't know.
Yeah.
That's on paper. That's kind of how I think Latter-day Saints see it. So it's a really big hurdle there, sadly.
It's been 10 years since the Ordain Women movement. You know, you mentioned there are 101 things we could change besides giving women priesthood authority in the church. What has changed in the past 10 years?
There have been a bunch of little changes, like married women can now teach seminary, like if they are church education system employees. Like once a woman had children, she could not do that. Women couldn't wear pants, I think, and be church employees. And so little things like that have changed at the ward level. Like women can now, we can witness baptisms, but along with 8-year-olds. So it's like we kind of get handed these little things. But then we also hand them to children, which makes it sound like women and children are always like this one segment of a population. So that felt like a step forward, but also two steps back, that, you know, we could now witness a baptism, or in the temple, we can now witness, you know, marriage sealings. And so, I mean, little things like that have changed. So we're still on that list of 101 other things that need to change. But yeah, little things like that.
Well, this weekend is the church's Spring General Conference in Salt Lake City. What do you want to hear from church leaders in the wake of this PR snafu we've been talking about?
What do I want to hear? Like, if my goals, like if all my heart's desires could be met, then yeah.
If patience was off the table.
Exactly. Like, it would be wonderful to hear, if nothing else, women, we hear you. We see you. We are praying about this. We know that many hearts are broken over whatever, the lack of equality, the lack of a feminine divine. We are taking this to God and we are going to pray about it. Like that would be amazing to hear. And I have 0% confidence we would ever hear that in a worldwide conference. Maybe in any type, you know, even if it was just like a local Utah County or Salt Lake County regional conference, even then I don't think we would hear it, but I definitely don't think we would hear it in a worldwide conference, because so many women around the world, depending on the type of, you know, government maybe they're used to, or, you know, culture and society, they are really, the LDS church is very progressive for some women in different parts of the world. So I don't see them saying, my heart's desire, yeah, in a worldwide conference.
Cynthia Winward, co-host of the At Last She Said It podcast, thank you so much for your time.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
If you drive by the Salt Lake City Temple, aka downtown's biggest construction site right now, you'll notice that the Angel Moroni is back on top. Why is this news? The Angel Moroni statue has been a part of the Salt Lake skyline for 128 years. And after it was shaken to the ground during an earthquake, some of us wondered if it would ever return. A 12-foot, 14-karat gold statue symbolizing the Savior's second coming is not just a metaphorical lightning rod in our city skyline, it's also, I learned, a literal one. For a long time, the Angel Moroni statue served the purpose of attracting lightning. But the Salt Lake skyline is changing. And at 210 feet, Moroni's second job is in other hands. Much, much taller buildings, developed with secular, out-of-state financing. Worth noting. That is all for us today here on CityCast Salt Lake. We will be back tomorrow morning with more from around this city.